but when you ask questions, there's a video loop, there's a 30-second PSA that was filmed to talk about Florida and the sharp rise in STIs. And it's an intentionally provocative video of seniors kind of, they're fully clothed, they're like dancing into consutural positions. And the superscript is about the sharp increase in STI rates. And so there are many ways to do it, but only one way to do it safely, wear a condom. Got a million views in like a month.
That is awesome.
But the website has all sorts of resources on it that are free downloads on emotionally safer sex and how to talk to your doctor, how to talk to your partner, where to get tested.
All that kind of stuff.
Pfizer
quit paying these.
Yeah. Great. Nice to meet you. Thanks for introducing yourself. So I guess we got about a minute to go.
If you haven't already picked up a handout, there are some on this little table here.
Thing so far down. If it was,
we can move it.
Is there enough string to move
sure.
it?
Sure. You want to move down here? Or I can move the chairs over there.
Yeah. And then.
Then I can stand it.
Yeah.
Is this yours or did somebody leave this? There we go. And it's on. Woohoo! Hi, everybody. Welcome to Our Whole Lives, Finding Solutions for Diverse Participants. If you have a handout, if you don't already have a handout, please pick one up. Today we're going to be stressing that, one of the major values of Our Whole Lives is justice and inclusivity. And so we want to address the fact that while we all have good intentions about being inclusive, we don't always get it right. So we're going to be working on finding some solutions for that. And the fact that inclusion isn't always successful. So we're going to bring up some of the practical and pastoral issues that means. We're going to be focusing on grades 7 to 9 and 10, 12. But there's going to be some general information that will work for you if you're working in another setting. So we'll start with some introductions. I'm Melanie Davis. I'm the Unitarian Universalist Association's Our Whole Lives Program Associate. I was one of the developmental editors on the second edition of the 7 to 9 curriculum, and I wrote the second edition of Sexuality in Our Faith. And I'm currently writing OWL for Older Adults, which is for ages 50 and above. And Rick is writing the Sexuality in Our Faith for the OWL for Older Adults. I have a PhD in sexuality education, and I'm a nationally certified sexuality educator and educator supervisor through the American Association for Sexuality Educators, educators, counselors, and therapists. And I teach human sexuality courses at Moravian Theological School, Moravian College, and Widener University. And I am an OWL Whole Lives facilitator and trainer. Suzanne?
I'm Suzanne Fast. I'm the president of Equal Access. Equal Access, where our members are Unitarian Universalists with disabilities, our families, our friends, our allies, and we come together with a common purpose, which is to enable the full engagement of people with disabilities in Unitarian Universalist communities and in the broader society. I have my MDiv from Meadville Lombard, and I am a candidate for ministry with the association. I'm a certified spiritual director and I am the coordinator for campus ministry for Florida Gulf Coast University, for the UU campus ministry there. I also am a Smart Church consultant for the Southern Region, and I facilitate for the Beyond Categorical Thinking program, and I am a facilitator for Our Whole Lives, 7 to 9 and 10 to 12. So the next part, though, is what brought you to come today? So I'm interested in a show of hands. Who here is here because you're a parent? You can raise your hand more than once. It's okay.
Yeah.
How about OWL facilitators? DREs? Some other interest that brought you here today? All right. Well, so we're going to try and get as many of your concerns and your questions as we can. And the plan is, by the end of the workshop, you're going to be able to list some kinds of potential challenges that participants with disabilities may have in OWL. Talk about parameters for enrollment in your OWL program. Find some ways to balance the needs of the individuals with the needs of the group. And explore how to meet sexuality education needs when OWL does not fit a child in your congregation.
So in 2011, I did a survey of Our Whole Lives facilitators. And it indicated that there's often a lot of concern about how to meet the needs of people who are on the autism spectrum or have attention deficit or attention-related disorders. The intellectual issues and the physical issues are usually of less concern to the people who are facilitating OWL. Because people are able to address those a bit more easily often. But they still have unique needs that we need to address. And the question is, how do we balance the needs of people who have special learning needs against the larger group? So to help facilitators, in the 7 to 9 revision, we have a special section devoted to the special education needs. And you don't have to necessarily be using that edition, if you're teaching 7-9, we want you to use the new edition. But if you're not teaching 7-9, you can still access this special supplement by going to the OWL web pages and downloading a PDF of this information. It's called Taking a Special Education Approach, and you can use it and adapt it to other RE classes as well. So the address for the OWL pages are www.uua.org/re/OWL, and then you just look under facilitator resources. It'll be right there. It prepares facilitators to anticipate and address some of the common learning needs of youth with autism spectrum disorders, attention-related, intellectual, and learning disabilities. And the reason that we added this is because sometimes these young people are at higher risk for sexual communication problems, for abuse, for sometimes legal issues, because they don't necessarily understand the boundaries that other people are able to understand more easily. So we're not going to get into specifics about that chapter because on the handout, if you don't already have the handout, it has the URL and you can access that on your own time. But we do want to lift up one point from it, which is that a common assumption is that the more we know about somebody, about their diagnosis, if they have one, that the easier it is and the more smoothly our programs are going to go. And the reality is that you might face any one of these three situations. You might have a person in your class that the family has shared with you their diagnosis or their special needs so that you can accommodate them. So that's the ideal that we want, right? The other one is that a youth does not have a diagnosis but asks for some kind of accommodations. And that might be a little more challenging for you because you don't know why. The other is that you suspect this person of needing special accommodations, but the family rejects that that their child has a problem. So you might never know everything that's going on with somebody in your program. But the good news is that whatever accommodations you make for one or two students, those will be good for everybody in the room. So you don't have to worry about over-accommodating as long as the accommodations are going to work for everybody. Suzanne?
Okay. So the most important thing you might get from me today is the importance of how we think about disability, how much of a difference that really makes, even though a lot of the time people aren't particularly aware about that. So I want to lift up two different models, different frameworks for thinking about disability. There's a medical model of disability, which is the most common one that you're going to encounter if you've been trained in education, medical fields, any of that. You've been trained with it, but we experience it all the time. So the medical model, the medical way of looking at disability is that there's something deficient here. And we have to manage it, we have to adapt so that this person can be more like everybody else. The social model of disability, which is the one that those of us in Equal Access urge people to be using at church, frames disability as just a natural part of human variation. And so disability happens because a society isn't actually accommodating the people who are different. Anytime where we're in a situation where we're starting to talk about diagnoses and things like that, it's very easy to get pulled into that medical way of thinking. So just to make it maybe a little bit more clear, when we're talking in this workshop, we're not talking about which youth don't fit the OWL program. We're talking about OWL may not fit certain youth. It's a really significant difference. And the distinction is also helpful to remember, because if our OWL program in our congregation isn't going to fit one of the kids in our program, when I think about it as OWL, it doesn't fit this beloved person, I'm more likely to remind myself, but this is somebody who still needs sexuality education. And so how are we going to do that if we're not doing that through OWL, and how are we going to help this family with that need? And I'm also going to talk a little bit about language. One of the ways of talking about people with disabilities that you may have encountered is people first language, where we talk about people with disabilities. And that's a very common, and something that when you don't know how people, how an individual likes to be referred to, that's a good place to go to. It's a good thing for when you're speaking in general. But it's also true that there are a lot of people who live with disabilities who prefer an identity-based way of speaking. So when I talk about people in general, or when I'm speaking formally as somebody from Equal Access, I talk about people with disabilities. When I'm talking about and for myself, I refer to myself as a disabled. And the reason I do that is because it's part of who I am. It doesn't, you know, I don't take it off sometimes. It's part of me, and it's part of what shapes my experience. And I raise this stuff because you're going to run into people with very different philosophies about who they themselves are and how they relate in the world. And it's really helpful if you have a little bit of that idea in your back pocket to think about when you're first starting to talk with somebody, you may not know. But as you begin to listen, if you listen to somebody who talks you know, always referring to themselves as autistic, that tells you something about their philosophy of who they are and what's happening in their experience of the world. Whereas most parents tend to refer to my child with autism. So when you hear those things, they really are telling you something.
You were talking about, I guess you said that. So the thing that's important is that nobody gets it right all the time. So we're gonna slip up, and let's be forgiving of ourselves and forgiving of other people, try to be as responsive as we can. So what we'd like to do is get some ideas from you about what some of your concerns are as DREs, as facilitators, as parents whose children might be in our classes. Let's just start, you can raise your hand in any order or whatever. What kind of issues are you fearing you might encounter or that you have encountered that have been challenging for you in terms of inclusion? Yes. So developmental appropriateness is what you're talking about, okay. Others? And then you.
This isn't necessarily related to disabilities, but teaching the 10th through 12th, which is going to be revised soon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed like so many activities, you had to define yourself as one or the other.
Yeah, and that is something that we've removed from the 7 to 9.
Yeah.
And it will be, changing when we adapt that. And yeah, that's sort of a general inclusion issue for even people who don't identify as trans or queer. But yeah, absolutely. Okay, so. Mm-hmm. You had your hand up.
I did. In general, difficult for them, and I am concerned about it in particular in an OWL setting where the discussion part is also can be so difficult. So that's one of the reasons that I'm here.
Okay. Other? Yes.
When you speak of 7 to 9, are you talking about age or class?
It's the grade level 7 to 9 curriculum.
Okay. Uh huh. So my difficulty, and I teach that age, is that it always seems like half the class is there and half the class is still in childhood and meeting those needs.
Mm-hmm.
And then every now and then I do get a child that is older but has been brought back because mentally they're younger.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem very naive, and I'm always afraid I'm going to shock them personally.
So would you call that developmental appropriateness or maturity? Yeah, okay. Other things that you're concerned about or that you anticipate dealing with? Let's go you and then you again.
Mm-hmm. Adapting it for severely visual impaired or black blind learners.
Okay, so visual impairment. Mm-hmm. And then you?
Similar to me, we have a teenager in our congregation who is both blind and developmentally delayed.
So you have two challenges facing you at once.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any others? Okay. Go ahead.
So a lot of times there's a challenge to distinguish between behavior that's uncomfortable and behavior that's unsafe. And one of the things that's really important, right, in L is it's one of the great places to learn to be uncomfortable, right? We could all benefit from learning to be uncomfortable, but not so much to be unsafe, right? So when we were talking about inclusion, you know, that's one of the places where sometimes we're bumping up against this. Well, is this, you know, is this just that I'm being uncomfortable here, or is there really something that's unsafe? And so so we have some questions that you can run through in your mind when there's a challenging situation and you're wanting to discern between them. And so the way I come about it is, okay, can I pinpoint the source of my discomfort here, starting there? Is the situation that we're in one where somebody is in a situation of being emotionally abused, spiritually abused, verbally abused, physically abused? What's happening here? Is anybody actually in any danger? But also to ask myself questions about, is what's going on here just, is it triggering something that's a trigger of mine, something that's making it difficult for me to step back away from what's going on and see it fully? And one of the things I think that a lot of the discomfort that folks have around deciding about inclusion problems is maybe sometimes a situation that I'm feeling and my values are not meshing. And so I'm feeling like, you know, the situation is not working well. I value strongly that everybody should be participating in the class, but I'm feeling like I don't know how to make that happen. That's real, and it's uncomfortable. But I ask myself, is this that it's unsafe, or is this that I don't feel like I'm quite living who I want to be in this situation, or that I don't quite know what to do in this situation?
So some examples. Now, you nobody mentioned particular behavioral issues in an OWL setting, but that is something that comes across my desk a lot. People calling to say there's somebody acting out. You know, concerns about developmental appropriateness could be your own, as Suzanne said, your own triggers about being embarrassed and being embarrassed for this young person to be in the class. And the same with maturity. The issue of accommodating a person with visual disturbances, you know, is a little bit a different course than the behavioral stuff, and we can address that later. What we'd like to do is, I don't know how many people we have, maybe break you up into groups of three, and what we have is we have scenarios. Some of them will maybe repeated. But we'd like you to discuss the questions. You read the scenario, one person can read it, and then read through the questions and have somebody take some notes, and then we'll come back as a big group and talk about the solutions that maybe you came up with, but thinking about the questions that Suzanne brought up.
Thank you.
Okay.
And
Okay, just try to wrap up the discussion that you're having right now, and then we'll come back to the larger group. Okay, let's bring your attention back to the group. So let's start with your group. Which scenario do you have?
We have the
Jax. Jax? Who else has the Jax scenario? Okay, so what we'll do is we'll do all the Jax stuff first. If you could use the microphone, please, and read the scenario out loud, and then
this one is maybe
could turn it and face the group.
I'm Jeff from South Orange County in California, and this scenario is every few OWL meetings, Jax gets upset and makes comments like, "You better shut up before I make you shut up." One day, Jax is observed playing with a small knife during the OWL meeting. Other participants and their parents have expressed concern, as have the facilitators. However, Jack's parents insist that Jax has a right to be included in the program. So that's the scenario. And did anyone want
to? That's actually a real scenario that was brought to my attention.
Could be. that's one of the things, is the disruption part, where not all the kids are causing the problems. So we talked about it in our group, and we said the situation may be, we don't know what the exact situation is from that, but it could be unsafe, it could be endangering the other kids, and if you're a facilitator, you really are trying to make sure everyone's safe, and you make covenants. I don't know how many people are facilitators. You make covenants between the kids right at the beginning, so you can, but it could be uncomfortable for everyone, the other kids, it slows down the progress of the classes, and for the larger group and for the facilitators, it could also be an uncomfortable, tense situation. How might the situation affect Jax's or the group's ability to focus and learn? Disturbing, distressing, may not attend, some of the kids may not attend, which you want them to come every time because it's so structured that you don't want to miss it. Often, I don't know if anyone else says, if we'll group the lessons together and do double lessons so it doesn't take 27 weeks to do. And if some kids then just don't go because they're nervous about this one child, then it disturbs it. The group dynamic, it gets skewed, and the kids don't want to participate as much as if one of the children is going to put them in danger. Which issues specific to this being an OWL program might apply here? We didn't know exactly what to do with that.
Okay, well, maybe one of the other
groups. Yeah, maybe one of the other groups would talk about. We were just saying that could be common, and I'm sure it's happened in some people's OWL programs, and we do have the covenant to go back to. Then it's between the students themselves talking to each other and saying, well, we agreed we're not going to do this and this and this. We've given up our phones because that's distracting, so they know. What solutions might you try? Review all the possible distractions, go over them that everyone has to adhere to. So it's not picking on one student, because I think that's one thing that the parent of that student would say, oh, you're singling out my child and ostracizing them from the group. Find out a little bit about Jax and what could be some of the causes that this child is going through that have nothing to do with the OWL class, like the roots of the behavior. Find other options for outlets. Some students have to have some totem or something they can calm themselves down with, especially if they're in an uncomfortable, it's easy to be uncomfortable when you're 13, I've found, and I remember. Then the also understanding different styles of learning that all the children will be having, and that takes a little bit of time, but it's worth it because they're not all going to learn the same way or the same speed, and some may have outbursts. What roles do the parents, DRE, facilitators, that's the Director of Religious Education, facilitators, minister, or others play in creating or addressing this problem? And we just said that we'd start with it small, right, with the child themselves first, and then that's just the facilitators working it out with the student and with the group and the other covenant people who made the covenant with them. And then before bringing it to the minister, we'd probably talk to the parent and say, hey, we're having some difficulty. Is there anything we need to know about? Try to get the parent involved with it. And that would keep it manageable. But if it does get to be that way where you feel endangered, you have to go on to the minister or the DRE, depending on how the structure of your church is. And then where or to whom can you turn for additional help if necessary? And we figured it would be parents, all the parents, have all the parents be talking about it. If there's that perception of, that one child is being bullied by the other kids or something, even if that's not happening, you might have to bring them all there so it's not, you're singling one out to address. Then the DRE, the minister, or the resources you just gave us from the UUA.
Yeah, good, so. Thanks.
Anybody else have that group?
Yeah, there were two other groups. So if you have something that repeats, don't repeat it, but if you have new information, if you'd like to add that would be great. New perspectives? Just come on up to the mic.
Yeah, more things. So I'm Gregory from Bainbridge Island. So one thing we didn't talk about, which you did and I thought was really good, was just that idea of going back to the covenant. But we didn't think of that. About the which issues specific to this being an OWL program. So I was thinking, and we talked maybe, I don't remember if I thought it or said it, that if this was a math class, it would certainly be threatening and bothersome, but the OWL class kind of depends on a feeling of intimacy with the kids. They have to be in a trusting environment, and that would make it much more difficult, where in a math class, it doesn't matter if you really trust that guy. and then for the knife thing, maybe we kind of consider that as almost a separate sort of incident. And if someone is fiddling with something, we can say maybe knives aren't really appropriate in this context. And if you want to fiddle with things, we have a koosh ball you can fiddle with. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
The other group?
Hi, I'm Christy from Salem, Oregon, just close by. I'm the director there. And as our group, we said a lot of the similar things. One thing that we talked about was, like in our congregation, we don't even have the kids bring knives. So right there was kind of an easy thing to say, hey, you know, that's not what we bring to our congregation to start with. So that helps a little bit with that. And then we felt yes on that first question that, yeah, it's uncomfortable for everyone. It doesn't make a safe environment for the group. And, of course, in OWL, you're wanting to set, the safe environment, the covenantal relationship, and certainly having a knife and someone angry doesn't help with that. And then finding the right balance with that. We were saying that we had hoped that by being in that class, the person, Jax, would work through some of the problems and that OWL could very well really help him. And so how far do you go to allow him to stay, and how do we make that work so that he can have the chance to have the OWL class, but not to the detriment of the other kids as well. So finding that balance. And then which issues specific to this being an OWL program, we've already touched on those, but also thinking how, you know, with kids with special needs, kids coming out of the foster system, different things who are in this program, how having a knife there, really aggressive behaviors would possibly trigger some of their past abuse, possibly, that kind of thing. So definitely not the place in an OWL class for that when they're focusing on thinking about, sexual issues and things. Let's see. What solutions might you try? One thing that we brought up as a group would be to set a separate covenant with the parents, you know, get together with the parents and the child and talk about a separate covenant that might help them create that to continue that matches up with the covenant that the group created. Also, even just, you know, straight up honest with the kids as a group. Let's say, I'll talk about this. How should we handle this? You know, I mean, we really inspire and try to get youth-led type things. This is a time and a safe place to say, hey, what are we going to do about this? You know, and without singling them out, certainly totally part of the solution. And often if they're part of the solution, they tend to kind of change sometimes. So that could be a positive benefit. What role do the parents, et cetera, play? We all agreed it needed to be a group effort. We all need to be on the same page. We might have different ways of going about it, a unified goal, so at least we're all working towards the same thing, hoping he can stay in the OWL class, and that would help. And another thought we had was providing a mentor, another person. You know, my first thought, and as a director, often if we did have a behavior problem, we'd bring in a parent and say, you know, we don't want your child to leave, but at this point we've tried X, X, and X. Please come sit with them, you know, and you're welcome to stay, and you just need to help us. With the OWL program, that's a little different. You can't, of course, invite your parents in. So talking about finding another OWL person that you feel like would meet that personality and could be a help and could be a mentor maybe to sit with them. And a positive thing, not a negative, you're in trouble, you have to sit with them, so it'd have to be delicately done, but that would be an idea. And the other question, I think we probably know a lot of those answers, turn to specialists in your congregation, counselors, education specialists, other OWL teachers and trained, so that does that.
Great. Other support, we've got the facilitators email list. You've got me. If you're with the people with the UCC, can call Amy Johnson at the UCC. If you've got, you know, other questions, you could ask Equal Access. One of the things that sometimes you might run into is sometimes there's a little power play between parties in your congregation. So the parents have one perspective, the religious educator has another perspective, the facilitators have another perspective. So before you start a program, if you can get a group, a covenant of right relationship for the congregation, often that will, you know, you can say, hey, here's what we're doing as a congregation. Why aren't we also following that in our RE classrooms and our OWL setting? When this scenario came my way, the issue was that it was less the knife, although the knife was the acute problem, it was less the knife and more the, if you don't shut up, I'm going to make you shut up kind of talk. And it was actually a parent that called me with a concern. And she said, you know, I've got, you know, here we're telling our children that you have a right to be safe sexually and to be set boundaries that are respected, and you're forcing me to have my children in a situation where they don't feel safe. And so it's a real struggle. One of the things that I tried to help with, because they had this political stuff going on, was what would, you know, if your minister is saying you have to make this work, well, what would you do if this same behavior were exhibited in the sanctuary during worship? How would you handle that? And that can open up a different level of you know, what kind of compassion would you show? What kind of inclusion would you show? How would you address this issue? Because sometimes they think the youth have this whole other thing going on. And, you know, right relationship is all ages, right? We just have to figure out how to make it work. What was the next scenario that we saw? What scenario did you have?
Pat.
You had Pat? Okay, would you like to read that? Maybe read just the first three answers that you have, and then the next group can address the rest.
Sure. So Pat has autism. I'm Barb from Edmonds. And I actually was I'm not an OWL trained. I've taken OWL, adult OWL. My daughter's taken OWL. And I was a facilitator, one-on-one facilitator for a student who took OWL this past spring. And I'm an occupational therapist and work with kids with disabilities as my job. So Pat has autism spectrum disorder and could be described as distractible, inflexible, and unpredictable. Pat likes to fold paper into ever smaller pieces and draw highly detailed drawings during OWL meetings. Pat sometimes paces the room from end to end throughout the meeting period. Often, Pat asks increasingly specific questions that prevent OWL workshops from moving forward. The facilitators are getting frustrated, and they have said that they think other students may drop out if Pat's behavior doesn't change. We didn't feel that the situation was unsafe. We felt it was clearly uncomfortable for some of the other kids if they're saying they're going to drop out. Sounded like it was uncomfortable if the facilitators are getting frustrated. It may or may not be. It might be Pat's doing what Pat needs. So sometimes kids, that's their behavior is what they kind of need right then to be able to stay in and to actually focus. And then that kind of goes into that how might that situation affect Pat and the group's ability to focus. And those kinds of behaviors can be very distracting to other kids. Again, like I said, for Pat, chances are it's what Pat needed to stay in. And then what issues specific to this being an OWL program might apply here? I think one of the things we feel is, and you addressed this at the beginning, is kids like Pat are probably the ones that need OWL the most. And so that, I think, is really important. And I think also, too, important for the kids who are in OWL to understand that kids like Pat are the most vulnerable, and that part of their responsibility as they're learning about how to keep themselves safe is to be aware of others in the community that may need some of their, and not necessarily kids with disabilities, but any kid in any situation might need some of that experience.
Thank you. Was there another group that had Pat's scenario? Would you like to share?
So, hello, I'm Becky Richardson. I'm from Nahant, which is a small town near Boston in Massachusetts. So, well, we were very lucky in our group because we had a very experienced person make some suggestions. So we felt the situation too was not dangerous, but it was very uncomfortable. And so for the whole group, the suggestion was made to specify a time and a place when you can ask questions or talk so that applies to everybody and not just to Pat. And then we recognize that Pat perhaps has to pace and fold up paper and draw, and that there might be a place out just outside of the group, if there was a circle, where if Pat wanted to withdraw and engage in especially in the drawing activities and the folding paper activities, that it be a place not only just for Pat, but two or three chairs where you could sit outside the group if you wished and carry on your own activities that did not relate to the group. And then in regard to the pacing, which also Pat might need to pace, if that could be done, again, outside the group instead of within the group, so that Pat would have a choice to be within the group or outside the group, but not, it wouldn't have to leave the group. And then, did I get this right? Might have to ask my group if I wrote this down accurately. And then in regard to, let's see, should I go on about the parents?
Well, there's no other group with Pat,
okay.
So we do need to pick up the pace a little bit.
Yes, we felt the parents should, the facilitators should talk to the parents and see if there was a specific issue that was making Pat uncomfortable, illness in the family or some sort of specific thing that was making Pat uncomfortable at that time. And then also talk to the minister and let the minister know what was going on to see if the minister had any suggestions. And people might, the parents might have some way also of dealing with this situation. Then additional help. Well, I don't know.
Well, we have resources
I guess
there.
You,
yeah, the resources
yeah,
there.
That
yeah,
that would be, yeah,
so
okay.
So one is of that? The things, thank you. One of the things that yesterday I did a workshop on autism and OWL with Raymond Sell, one of our OWL facilitators and trainers, and he suggested a team approach. So if the young person has a counselor at school or a teacher that you could talk to, what works in the regular classroom that we can then bring into the OWL setting? To manage, to make this work for everything. The other thing that Raymond said was that we often on our group covenants, we put self-care, you know, go to the bathroom when you need to go to the bathroom, and that one of those could be, you know, this is a STEM-friendly environment, you can pace if you need to pace, but it's also everybody needs to take responsibility for self-care, so that if somebody's pacing in your line of vision and that's bothering you, you can maybe negotiate with the person with autism to say, can you pace back here where it's not going to interfere with me, because the concern about being bothersome can be so distracting to the person with autism that they can't function well.
Mm-hmm. So part is the education piece.
Yes.
Telling the rest of the group, this is, you know, Pat, and Pat needs to do these kinds of behaviors to become.
But we can negotiate how to make this work.
But if you don't do that, then they just think, I don't understand this.
Right.
Why?
But and the thing is, if we don't discuss these things, then we're saying it's sort of us versus them. And, we're negating the possibility that somebody, anybody in the room might fall in love with somebody with autism. And so it's not just getting to know the person in your OWL classroom, but understanding it more, normalizing it more, so that you have a world of possibilities socially and romantically later on. In the back.
Mm-hmm.
Right, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Yes.
We had a child who was not very verbal, I mean, he was with autism, and we just set up the room so that there was a path behind the couch, and he could just get up off the couch and walk, and he was still part of the group, and still, you know, the teachers were facing the kids, and he was still in the audience, but he could just be in the back.
And I think that the group's idea of making a space for more than just Pat
right,
is really good. And often we get so rigid about how we want to implement things. Well, you know, everybody's got to be in the circle over here. Well, there are some youth who talking about anatomy freaks them out. And they don't have autism. It just freaks them out. So if they could have something else to do while we're talking about clitorises and penises, that could be helpful for all sorts of young people. Did you want to say something? Oh, okay.
Doing great.
Yes.
So his mom actually sent a bag full of beads for him to...
Which can be good for anybody.
I was just going
to
say...
Yeah, she's, yeah, oh, go yeah, to...
So his mom sent a bag of beads for him to, you know, manipulate, and the kids actually asked to have their bag, you know, other kids wanted their, so she would send like six bags of beads.
Yeah. And beads can be noisy, so a quieter option is a bag of rubber bands, koosh balls, you know, things that are rubber, feel, they're good often to play with because they're quiet. You had a, could you go up to here?
Oh, I'm sorry.
So people can't hear you.
His,
not about Pat, with Pat. So with Pat in the room.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we're, but the, this is what he's doing and what?
So you know, it's not like here's Pat. We're going to talk about Pat's problem and this is what Pat does to solve it, right? We're not going to do that. But we can say we all have different things that we do to make ourselves comfortable and to help ourselves focus.
Okay.
Pat particularly might be, you might observe Pat doing X, Y, or Z. If Pat's comfortable talking about that themselves, even better. But what you don't want to do is say, that's Pat, Pat does that, and we're the rest of us, we don't.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, well.
Yeah. You want to make it a conversation where people can take care of their own comfort in their own ways.
So you might start by saying, Pat, would you feel more comfortable if you got up and
if
walked?
Anybody feels uncomfortable, you can get up and walk.
You can name your own.
Yeah.
When I'm nervous, yeah. I do.
But yeah. You wouldn't get a whole room of kids that then want to.
Well,
do
you might. You might at different times. I mean, I've had people who, when they were watching the visuals, they were popping individual pieces of popcorn and looking at, you know, I mean, kids do what kids do.
Not rules, but you have to, in your mind, have things that they're going to do that.
Right,
that
right.
You still can progress the
course. Yeah, you can. It's actually easier than you might think if you think of including everybody in that process. Mm hmm. So let's quickly, because we have some other things we need to go through. So maybe quickly on the Hayden scenario. Somebody have that one? So maybe just say, read the scenario and... So maybe just do question number... Read it and then say question number one and three and maybe one other one. But don't do all of them because we're running out of time.
So Hayden has trouble sitting in a chair and often blurts out answers and interrupts peers. Hayden sometimes appears jittery and distracted. The ALF facilitators assume attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is the most likely explanation, but the parents haven't offered this information. An ALF retreat is planned with 5-hour workshops scheduled over the course of a Friday evening to Saturday afternoon retreat. Is this situation unsafe, uncomfortable? If so, for an individual, the larger group, or the facilitators? And we talked about unsafe, no, but distracting. But the one thing we did talk about is there is possibly unsafe in the interactions with Hayden. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, look that way.
I have my back to you. With Hayden, because if people make fun of him or hurtful things are said or actions that could affect him and be unsafe with what the outcome is for that. Uncomfortable. Al's already uncomfortable for most kids, and so this may add to it and be a distraction there. Which issues specific to this being an Al program might apply here? We talked about the amplified discomfort. Because of the additional stress interruptions, it might shut down conversation. It could affect the conversation doing that. It could lead to inappropriate actions, depending on the age. But the kids, a lot of times, will egg the other one on. If there's something, they will help facilitate and keep Hayden involved and going. And the other one that I think that was one of the best questions, what roles do parents, DRE, facilitators, minister, or others play in creating and addressing this problem? And I think if this is something that people have concerns about, open conversation, like you say, include Hayden in the conversation, but meet with the parents, find out what Hayden needs, how Hayden interacts with certain things, what we can do to help him with any of those, build a good positive environment, knowing what Hayden's weaknesses are or what might help him with those. And the one thing we talked about was guiding the covenant. When we have the kids make the covenant, we want to guide and direct the covenant to help facilitate what Hayden's needs are, so we can help with a guided covenant to help with that.
Okay. Thank you. I think we're going to cut off the scenarios for now. I just want to say one thing. 5 workshops in a weekend? Heck no. Heck no. I wouldn't do more than 3 over 2 days. And for any of the youth in your group, but particularly if you have new youth who have attention deficit issues, you want to build in so much physical stuff, games, exercises, yoga breaks, whatever. And if there's an activity that's scheduled one way and you can do it a more physical way, you know, that's good for everybody, okay? So let's move on because we can talk. I'd be happy to talk with people afterwards about the other ones. Suzanne? Yep. Thanks.
Okay, so some of the things that we wanted to share to think about when you're setting some parameters around including a child in OWL, questions to think about. So how willing are the parents to discuss the issues that are of concern to the facilitators or the DRE? Will the parents assist in finding some strategies to help include their child in the program? How does the child communicate? Do you understand it? You know, do you have a grasp on that? This is a great one. Is the child going to be able to absorb information from the program? Because it's entirely possible to not be really participating all the time, but still be getting a lot of information from the program. Is this child usually a part of religious education with this group of people who are taking this class? What's school like for this child? Are they in the general classroom, and what strategies do they use at school? Is this child a friend of the other people in the program? And if this child is not welcomed into OWL, what message is that going to be sending to the other children?
So those are good questions. Just keep in mind when you have any issues that arise. And Suzanne, you had an interesting suggestion about with the communication board.
If there's somebody in your program that usually uses a communication board, then get the material to the parents ahead of time of what you're going to be doing so that they can set that stuff up in the board so that the child can participate more readily. If you give the information ahead of time, then all of a sudden they're communicating in ways they would have been shut out of otherwise.
One of the things we did with our student with autism was we met with the parent ahead of time, and we found out her most important goals, the parent's goals. And then we could sit there, so when I was in there with her and they'd be going over things, a lot of it's too much too fast for some kids. But when she needed a break, I could take what I knew was the parent most important piece of that lesson, write it down so the parent had it later, and also review it with the girl. Because that's the thing to keep in mind is maybe a kid can't take in everything, but what's the one or two most important things you want that student or that student needs out of that particular lesson?
Yeah, and you wouldn't even have to write it yourself. You could photocopy that you know, if you wanted to do that. I had a young man in a grade 7 to 9 class who had a cochlear implant. And before he got that, he had learned to lip read. So, you know, you might think, oh, well, he's got it all. But his parents said, no, we want the curriculum at home so that we can go read it through him the night before so that the information is fresh in his mind. So he knows new words that are coming out of our mouths, and he can understand them. Now, the thing was, he was supposed to sit facing us. And, you know, he's a kid. He didn't always want to face us. So, but he had had the information at home before, so we were covered there. So sometimes it just takes a little creativity in terms of how you're going to work with this youth. So sometimes, despite all of these good intentions and all these good solutions, OWL just isn't going to fit a particular child. So you do have some options. So if your facilitators are willing and if they have time, they can meet with this youth to go over particular like highlights, or if you have a personal learning assistant, that can happen too. Remember, if you do that, you always want to have two adults because it's a safer congregation practice. The parents can take the curriculum home. If it doesn't work in the OWL setting either, you know, I mentioned supporting the youth by giving it at home and then the youth was in the classroom. But even if the youth didn't work out in the classroom, if the classroom didn't work out for the youth, parents buy OWL all the time for at home. We have homeschoolers using it. So that's certainly an option. If they do that, I would suggest you also invite them to use sexuality in our faith at home, so it's all still in the context of UU values. They may not use the visuals at home. The only way that people can access the visuals is with trained facilitators. So, you know, that might be something if the parents are, you know, you can work out a deal where you'll, well, you know, the facilitators can do that. I must say it'd be a little weird for a young person to have a bunch of adults and no other youth. But that's, you absolutely cannot loan out the visuals for parents to show them at home. And there might be other kinds of sex ed that work better for this youth than OWL. OWL is not always the best approach for everybody. So you have a list of resources. If you don't have it, you can pick it up. And, you know, there are free lesson plans online that I linked to there. There are specific books that I listed for people with developmental disorders, with autism, and more resources are being developed all the time. So you do have options. And I said, I'm available, Suzanne's available, Amy at the UCC is available. Now, another resource that I don't know if I mentioned on that sheet, in this fall we are field testing out, parents as sexuality educators. And you can write to me at owl@uua.org. And get involved in this field test, because that way the parents are able to supplement whatever you're doing. If their young person has a day that it's just not going to work out to come to OWL that day, the parents will have the ability and the comfort level to provide that information at home. So I would encourage you to do that. Okay. Are there any questions that we can answer for you, or maybe rely on the wisdom of the room, because we have a few more minutes that we can address some issues. Yes.
Can I just speak from here?
Yeah.
If you come to the microphone, then your question will be on the recording, and other people will benefit.
Oh, is this being recorded? I didn't even know.
So this isn't entirely related, but we had. I've taught out once, just mm-hmm. once, and. We had one girl and her mother, they wanted to split, and what they wanted was more opportunities to split into gender groups, boys and girls, where they could talk about things. And I had noticed in the curriculum that that happens very rarely. I can only think of twice, once when we're actually talking about anatomy, where girls are talking about girl parts and boys are talking about boy parts, but then also the word game at the beginning. Mm-hmm. To me it seemed like it was more of a, these are not girl issues and boy issues, they're human issues, and we can all work on it together. So what do I do?
So one of the things you want to make sure, whatever the issue is in OWL, that you don't let the needs of one parent override the needs of everybody. This usually happens more with the visuals, with the sexuality and our faith visuals, that one family will say, it's too much, we don't want you to show them. And the solution is, okay, then your child doesn't see them, but we're going to make them available to the other children, right? I would inquire with that parent why it's important to have the gender-separated learning. Why is that a particular touchstone for that parent? Because, you know, it's better for the general group if you're not constantly splitting it up. You want the group to bond. So I don't know what the impetus for wanting to break out, especially now with so many kids being gender fluid. The revised edition offers the option for the only gendered activity is there's an option to split for that puberty discussion, but there's also information on how to do it as a large group. So I would take that up with the parent in particular. I wouldn't change the curriculum for that. The parents might, because they might feel that too many, the parents might need sex ed themselves because they might feel boys can need the privacy to talk about this and girls need the privacy to talk about that. But they really learn, but they really learn better when the genders are all mixed, and especially when we're honoring all the different genders. Yes, can you?
So I was letting this go because it's not about learning styles or the topic of the thing, but now I'm not. When people were discussing the case studies, I noticed that all of the unspecified gender participants described in them were gendered and all as male. And I just wanted to, by one person or another reading and commenting, and I did it myself when we were talking in our small group, this Jax with the J-A-X, I decided that was a boy. And I don't know why I decided that, but I just want to ask everybody to look at that within themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And always, it's so easy to blow that stuff off and just assume we've got boys and girls and that's the game. That is not the game.
Yeah, there's a reason that why I put those names in there, because they're gender-neutral names. Are there any other questions? We have about a minute left. Yes, can you come up to the mic?
We were discussing how we educate the parents, which is part of this conversation, but often, and we go to great lengths in our church to talk to the parents beforehand twice about the curriculum and show them the books, and they have the activities they have to go through in one of those introductory, and yet quite often they are shocked during the course of the curriculum of what we're teaching. And I don't know how to handle that, but one of our groups suggested that they're going to try teaching the same lesson side by side, the parents in one room, and which is a great idea to encourage conversation between the parents and the children. I don't know if we can do it in our church, but maybe there's
another
ideas.
Solution that I think might be a little more. One is to field test the parents as sexuality educators, because that will introduce the topics, the same topics that are in OWL, but teach them how to talk about those with their young people. I would not concurrently do the same curriculum, because the 7-9 curriculum is a special, wonderful experience for young people, and if their parents are taking it at the same time, it takes that uniqueness, that this is for me kind of experience away. I would rather have you offer OWL for adults to the parents while the young people take OWL to 7-9, and so that the parents aren't saying, oh, I know what you learned today, ha ha, we talked about it too, and here's the solutions we came, you know, let's leave the 7-9 as their special thing. That's what my recommendation would be.
I just want to take a moment of your time before we end to say, if you haven't already heard, Equal Access and the UUA have introduced a brand new program for congregations as a whole called Accessibility and Inclusion Ministry. And I would invite anybody to stop by our booth and talk to us about it. And we even brought a few buttons along, so if you would like a button. But this is something that your congregation as a whole might be interested in engaging.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Melanie.
Thank you. I didn't realize this was being recorded. That's great.
It should be.
Hi. Nice to meet you, Dwayne. Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
I want to catch up. I was on the
you for your work.
And I was told a couple of years ago that there was an evaluation.
Yeah, that fell apart because the Christian community was running that, and they fell apart for ethical issues and the leader actually committed suicide. But the problem with that study anyway was that it was a flawed study. They were.
Sir, the vision. Can you grab him, please? Hi, Suzanne wanted to address your question. So they were asking questions about, you know, before and after, has OWL changed your opinion of sin? Well, you know, we don't even talk about that, you know. So what I'm doing now is we have a research being done in Florida. Independent of the UUA, a woman who was testing it in charter schools to see what. She's having to customize it a little bit to use it, and she's trying to prove to the Florida schools that this will be efficacious. I have a researcher at San Diego State who's interested in studying it out in communities, and I'm also working with Widener University to get a baseline in our congregations. So that's more academic style research that will be much more useful to us. So anything that gets state or federal funds has to be evidence-based.
Thanks for doing that work.
And the researchers that have come to me, they are looking at all the public health things that will get us that. To be able to say we are evidence-based, meaning onset of sexual activity, use of protected sex. Now, we are also interested in the social justice stuff, but that doesn't get us into the public schools. We are in charter schools. We are in some Montessori schools. We are in homeschooling associations. Other faith communities are using it. There is one detention center that uses it. So it's out and about. There are also a lot of youth serving organizations that use OWL. And even though public schools aren't supposed to use OWL, a lot of the smaller schools kind of go under the radar and use it anyway. Nice to meet you. Thanks again for being on that task force so long ago. Yeah, when we moved to headquarters, part of my job was purging some of the documents that were, you know, we kept all the important stuff and sent it along to, not Star King, what's the RE library, Sophia Foss Library or something. They got all the historical records about the creation of AYS and about OWL, and so I learned about it, the history, as I was purging all the receipts and, you know, so thank you.
New materials, we were actually just having a
yeah, one of the things, she was the overarching, like the umbrella, but there are 12 subject matter experts who contributed, like the person who wrote the STI chapter or workshop is the New Jersey State head of the Department of Health group that does the safe of sexually transmitted infections. So really, I really brought in those experts, and then she kind of smoothed out the edges and added some of her own stuff. So, it's being revised now. So 7 to 9 came out in November. It takes about 2 years to get a revision done, and we can only accommodate one at a time because I'm only working 25 hours a week. 7 to 9. Yeah, it came out in November. We did workshops on it.
So we're.
Everybody sexually would benefit.
That would be the 4 to 6 curriculum. So that's the one that we're revising now. So we'll probably have that ready for field test next spring.
I've even just used there's a kind of
so your facilitators can just use the more updated language.
We have some webinars online. We did a webinar when we released 7 to 9, second edition. And we talk about language. There are some videos that you can watch. So if you email me, I can give you the links to that stuff. So it's I don't, my cards are gone. I'll just,
but it's also really helpful for me to hear that.
Wow, and arrange the cards.
Yeah.
Well,
we're moving on
not
this issue. There are people
Widener.
Who want
this. This is in Chester, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. That.
Sure, sure. Melanie Davis.
Hi.
Sure. So the good news is, for the parents of sexuality educators, you don't need training yourself to hear. It's not an OWL curriculum. It doesn't
work.
Yeah,
right. Well, we're not going to have OWL.
It's the way that
the
OWL addresses, so you have these. So you, have
so you
like,
might.
It's a big, we've lost a bunch.
But can you partner with other congregations or even UCC churches?
We're just thinking about it. And, I mean, I want to be trained, but lately all of it's
done.
Right. So talk to your district or your regional rep to see if that person has heard of other congregations in your situation, and maybe you can band together hosted training. It's often cheaper to host your own training than to fly two people.
I know, that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. And keep your eye on the calendar, because I add trainings with regularity.
Just a moment or two, so me.
But another reason to host it here.
I know. Yeah. Well, in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, can parents do the offsite with their self-publishing? Do the kids have to be in a training, the alternates, to be able to do that? Or is that the interesting?
Parents, are you absolutely welcome to buy the curriculum?
Okay.
Right.
Right.
Everybody can
ideally, like in the OWL setting, you know, prefer the parents not facilitate for their own children, only because
I think it would be better if everybody was doing that.
But barring that, I'd say
so absolutely.
You have to seriously modify it because you're not going to be doing role play. You know.
I think that's
better than nothing, certainly. But the field test.
I wish I was doing OWL where you are.
And you really
they're
don't
not,
know,
you know, not, they won't get the
audio. I mean, to do,
I mean,
to do
the other
audio
thing is
and
if you
that
band
sort of
together
stuff,
and invite friends of friends of friends, it doesn't, they don't
rail
all
on 7 to 9.
In my congregation, we ask for $125 donation if their kids are
home.
Not all families can pay it, but
it would be,
for those who can, it helps offset some of the training.
And, you know, we're always asking for things to be made available electronically so that people can have their braille or read it to them. But we're not anywhere near getting the copyright people to realize that they really need to do that. We're working on it. But we're not there yet. We've got somebody now. But the actual participant exercise.
No, you don't need our permission at all. You know, we still would want you to have your facility trained.
Would you have
access
to
the use of OWL all the time? I'm
to
still
out the things that the students actually need.
And there are no special rules. You know, you still want
to
do the parent orientation if you're working with
people. I have hope and reservations about that.
And it's especially important to get out in the community
to
because you know trust and loyalty to you that you would in another set. There's an adult curriculum. The young adult is 18 to 35, and the adult is 36 and above. I'm writing the one for 50 and above. But that's not going to be available. Go ahead and offer the adult out. And let me know how it goes, because I try to keep track of where
the sexual education
are.
And if you
want, gifts,
that I mentioned I'm a certified
asex.org.
But there are some resources.
There's a find a professional search tool on there, and you just click on your state, and you can probably get guest speakers. There's certified therapists, educators, and counselors. Well, not all certified, but they can talk about sexuality.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So if you don't get your OWL program going for whatever reason, you could use a guest speaker for sure. Good luck.
More questions. I just
have to tell you a story.
Yeah.
My wife and daughter and I taught the first grade together. And at the end, we had the parents and the kids together. We're going around this happening like last year. That's the program.
That's wonderful.
I like the scene.
That's great.
Yeah.
Hold a minute.
Keep in touch.
I like the penis and the vagina the best. His father was next.
From time to time.
Response,
you know, what you tried, what you experienced.
I have nothing to say.
Because I'm gonna keep pushing on this. Keep pushing this forward because we need these resources for people.
Hey,
and,
thanks for coming.
Thank you for being here. I actually
I would love
lawyer,
to hear.
Really
how it goes.
No, no problem. I'll be happy to touch. I kept the handout and I'm on
like, what's the timeline
the,
right on
the equal access email, so I get their the newsletter often. So,
right,
so,
right.
So I stay in
so
the loop. So
the timeline is until the
board
is like in the publications department. It's been written, field tested, developmentally edited, sent to the publications department for formatting and everything.
That's a new edition as well.
The 4-6 we're revising now.
Okay.
Yeah. So that'll be in field test next spring probably. And so probably, you know, until at least next year we'll start looking for authors for that, for the 10-12 talk and start having those conversations.
Like as in 2016?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. How long it takes depends on how long it takes, you know, to find the authors, to get them to on a schedule. Usually it takes at least 2-3 weeks to create one workshop. So it's not a fast thing because they don't necessarily want to just revamp the ones that are there.
No.
They want to, you know, in some instances start completely new, like we did with the 7-9 this time. We created some on a bolt call. So then we field test for a whole year. And then it goes through a couple months of developmental editing to get the writing down and straighten out and look at the field test results and incorporate those. And then it takes 6 months in the publications department to revise.
Okay.
So you're probably more like looking at 2018.
Yeah. Okay.
But in the meantime, there are resources online. You know, 7-9 has updated gender language and you know, we're encouraging facilitators to refer to 7-9, you know, to open up and to there. We have webinars. I did a webinar on the new edition and that talks about the language. We have videos. So if you email me, I can give you links to that updated language and then your facilitators or your whoever.
Well, we have the copies of them.
Right, but the webinars, see, they didn't take the webinars when it came out. Is there,
I don't know if they did or not.
Okay.
I was facilitating the 10-12, and there was another group doing the 7-9. So
I think that we have a great idea.
Is that email? I have your email.
Oh, okay. So what you want to just send me a note and I may send you a link.
Okay, yeah, that would be cool.
The videos, for example, the guy who wrote the gender identity workshop, he talks about the difference between sex, gender, identity, sexual expression,
nice.
And that kind of thing. So,
nice.
Yeah, those
okay.
are good resources.
So, but I'm actually also coming at this from as a writer, a facilitator,
mm-hmm.
and I just love the
that's
idea
of
working on it. Yeah.
That, and I'm
so,
wondering what experience you've seen.
So, certainly subject matter expertise.
And nobody came in and is anatomy. And you wanted to revamp the anatomy chapter.
It's not a panel. It's like
I gotta get out of here so she can do that thing.
We can talk in the hall.
Yeah, I'll walk out with you.
Thank you.
I think that went well.
I hate when people run over there trying to get rooms.
Yeah.
Me too.
But I visited there once.
Yeah.